100,000 little bitch. Hello humans, welcome to Audio Face. We are an irreverent podcast about music, news, and culture that mostly matters. I'm Sean.
I'm Dan.
This is episode 142. Yes, I know I'm doing it because it's an even number. We did that on purpose. So we have three albums for you guys. We have Future's High Off Life. We'll get to that. We have How I'm Feeling Now by Charlie XCX and Grey by Moses Sumney, which is the full release of Grey because we had Grey Part 1.
A little bit earlier
in like January or something like that, maybe. So we don't have the full release of that. We've got singles by Slow Tie and a remix of Never Come Back Caribou from Fortet. And some new stories and other shit for you guys as always. So yeah.
Should be exciting. Let's jump into the first one.
So we've got Enemy by Slow Tie. He released two singles this past week, correct?
Three.
Oh.
Yes. There's Enemy, there's Magic, and then there's Body Bag.
And Body Bag?
We only are going to talk about one of the singles because I think one is just like funny in the news, and I think it's just like funny for you and funny for us on this podcast in general. We usually don't review when artists cluster their single releases because we would rather listen to the full album as a whole project. Because that's just a long-standing Audio Face rule.
Yes.
But we do, that does allow us to do at least one, and so why not Enemy?
Why not Enemy, yeah. Because it opens up with Matty Healy randomly. I'm like, wait, what?
Yeah,
it was... I was really confused.
Yeah, it was a Matty Healy quote from the Enemy Awards, and it's like, this is all very, very on-the-nose referencing.
It is.
Slow Tie's Enemy Awards meltdown last year.
Yeah, which we did talk about.
Where like he, yeah, it's... Anyways, the song itself, it's interesting, it's fiery, it's fast-paced, but
it's
like...
It's very fast-paced. It's alright. Fuck around with some children and I'll put that on my kids. Find out where you live, where the time is right. I forget, don't forgive, I need a revenge. So I made a plan to kill you with kindness, my holotips. Keep my name out your dirty mouth. Frightened, don't know what you keep on crying about. I set fires cause I'm burning to burn down your house. I get lit.
The thing, it's so hard for me to take Slow Tie seriously sometimes because he sounds like if Mac Miller were trying to be Eminem.
Yeah, I could get that, I guess.
Yeah, like no disrespect to Mac Miller, rest in peace, but like it's he just sounds like a really like white British Eminem. And I know for a lot of Americans, sometimes it's hard for you to even take British rappers seriously, but like
some are really good.
Like I can take Skepta really seriously. I can take Stormzy very seriously. Right. I just can't take Slow Tie very seriously when he raps. I think it's like punk thing is more interesting, but he just like sounds like he's like
it's kind of yeah.
It's like, what are you gonna do? Get into a bar fight with me and your joggers? Like I just don't take him seriously. But it's not a terrible song.
Yeah, it's whatever, and it's funny because it calls back into moments of his, you know, Enemy rage quit of this past awards, Enemy Awards, and there was one part where it's like, Slow Tide, you're canceled, you cunt, or something like that.
Yes.
In the middle of the song too, and I started fucking dying.
Yeah.
It's just really weird and random, but you know.
Goes pretty hard.
Yeah. Then we have the Never Come Back, a Fortet remix of Caribou song, and it's pretty cool.
Yeah, I like it. Fortet and Caribou. Of course, we talked about Caribou and had a bonus episode about him,
yes.
About his history, that we released right before his album came out, and that was really, really good. And Fortet also released a pretty good album this year as well. So it's a really nice match and comes together really well. Plays with a lot of Fortet styles, of course.
It definitely, yeah.
A Caribou song.
It sounds a lot like Fortet, but it's cool to have. He still kept the main theme of Never Going Back, which is cool. Because a lot of times when people remix, they can make it where
just
they just sample like
it up,
yeah, they just either crunch it up or chop it up so much that it
you can't really resemble the song. It's just like little bits and pieces of it. But this one, it sounds like an actual remix of that song, like a different version of that song, which is kind of.
And by the way, it's not bad when artists do that per se all the time. It's just sometimes you want a little bit of a balance of it. And so much of Caribou's was like a really good electronic sounding song. Yeah,
so you didn't need to do too much to it.
Exactly. Yes. So let's go right into the news, basically.
Yeah. So. LP, the other member of Run the Jewels, his debut album, that holy crap, that came out 18 years ago, Jesus.
Yeah.
That's wild.
It's golden era hip hop right there.
Seriously. It's 2002, man. Woof! Anyways, he's doing a big reissue campaign, and you can finally stream his first album, Fantastic Damage, which I don't remember the last time I listened to that, but it's been a long time.
Yeah, I listened to it very recently, actually.
Oh, because of this, of the Run the Jewels episode.
Yeah. Bonus episode of Run the Jewels with fan favorite guest Tammy, and we talked about the history of Run the Jewels, and part of that was LP's own personal history, and Fantastic Damage was his first project. It hadn't been released on streaming services yet, but it was a little bit of rumblings here and there that it looked like it was about to be, so this is a little bit semi-expected, but still really great. There are some really fantastic songs on there.
Dead Disney is still probably my favorite.
Mine too, man.
It's so funny.
Yeah, but it's just like really, like it sounds like it would be in a record store thematically right next to Operation Doomsday. Like as an album.
Yeah.
It's definitely its own style, but Doomsday. Like there's a little bit of comic book influence. It's got that like turn of the century era.
Which is probably my favorite hip hop.
It's my favorite of the Uncle Rap period. Like, it's sometimes the early, like, late 80s, early 90s stuff is like, oh, it's corny, but it's, like, cute, because, like, look what it turned into.
Yeah.
But, like, as far as where I go back
and then you go to M-Food, you get M-Food, and you're like, well.
Well, that's it.
Con queso, and you're like, all right, well.
Yeah. All right. And another thing, this looked like it was going to be a major story, and it was, like, sensationalized a little bit, but there's no need for it to be.
As Tom York says, and then it turned to a fart, a wet fart in the wind, it just fluttered away.
Yes, there's a saying that goes, one day you're the cock of the walk, the next a feather duster. Oh, ironically, yeah. That saying is from Piers Morgan's mother. It was probably describing her son. Anyways.
Probably.
Essentially, there were these hackers that stole gigabytes of data from a prominent New York entertainment law firm. This law firm has clients ranging from Ella Mai to Mary J. Blige to Christina Aguilera to Mariah Carey to Nicki Minaj to Lady Gaga to Jessica Simpson to Run DMC to Donald Trump. In no particular order.
Oops.
The thing is, this is the illegally obtained information from Grubman, Shire, Musilus, and Sachs. LLP or whatever systems, which basically means it's a law firm.
Yes.
So the ransomware hackers wanted like around $100 million or so for this information in return for it, which I don't know. I've seen Get Smart. It's kind of lowballing.
Yeah, I mean, it's $100 million. Is like, come on, dude. You should go $1 billion.
Yeah, if you've not seen like any Austin Powers movies, it's a little lowballing. But it turns out like the information wasn't really all that juicy. It's just like contracts and invoices and stuff like that. Even the stuff with Donald Trump. Like I checked to see like, oh, a hacker got Donald Trump's information. This seems like it should be big news. It turned out to be really nothing.
Yeah.
Which is fine, I guess. We don't like want, I mean, actually hacking is bad, okay? But if it's not revealing anything, like that could be potentially like
harmful. Yeah, exactly.
It's not uncovering something that's bad. It doesn't really matter. It's just mostly punitive.
They're not being the plumbers, so.
Yeah, anyways.
Oh, Lord.
We listen to Future's High Off Life, so you don't have to.
It is 21 songs, an hour and 10 minutes long.
Woo!
Oh, Lord. A lot of Future. One thing's for sure, Future, you are now on the, well, I mean, you've been on the cusp of, please stop making music for a long time because you release like 6 albums a year. So just like.
Not exaggerating. Like
dead ass.
I think last year there were 3 or 4 projects.
Because I know there is Future Hendrix, The Wizard, you had Monster, and you had another one, I'm pretty sure. Save Me.
Yeah.
Like how many Future albums do there need to be? Does it need to be? Anyways, where to start with this? Trapped in the Sun, the opening track, isn't bad, actually. I listened to it, I started the album off. I'm like, okay, it's decent trap. There's nothing spectacular about it or anything, but he wasn't overdoing it on the auto-tune, which is nice, so I could actually understand what he's saying for once in his life, which I go, wow, this is what he sounds like normally. Cool. He's probably still wearing sunglasses indoors, though, because it's future, and he likes to be a rock star.
Yeah.
But anyways, so opening song's okay. Hi, Tech Tech, Touch the Sky, those are just... those two songs could basically be the same. You could just put them into one, two songs. And then that's basically the entire album. It's just like that. I don't know how many songs I kept listening to that they either had the same exact beat or they had the beat with just like one extra snare or one extra drum. And I'm trying to be as like open-minded, thoughtful and open-minded as I can. I've turned the tide on the Uzi Vert's album because it started to grow on me a little bit. It's still like, wow. It still sounds like it's a Fisher Price piece of shit, but like at least the songs are different.
And this usually happens every single year a little bit, Sean, where like, yes. there's a trap album, you hated it first, but then you listen to more trap albums, you're like, oh Jesus, it's worse than I thought.
And this is making me, this is making me appreciate Travis Scott because at least he does different shit. I don't like his music.
Just
much,
barely. And I was like
barely different shit.
Because like, we're near the top, like Solitaire's with Travis Scott is like, wow, Travis Scott, you really just love the same like
and then I was
about, three hook notes like
and
all
I was
the
gonna
time.
Say the thing with Travis Scott and Future on all their songs, they literally do the same exact formula for a song where it's like
Solitaire diamonds, I can show proof that these bitches on me just like a pop group. I got racks on my mind and I can't lose. And I got solitary diamonds, solitary jewels. Watches full of kids, pockets full of blue. Solitary diamonds, solitary jewels. Girls getting naked in my swimming pool. I wanna take care of you and your friends.
Yeah, and that's like just their
the
flow.
The drums are very
their
similar.
Flow, their flow and everything is the same, which just... after there's a while, one thing about making it's it a, super monotonous.
There's one thing about making it a style. There's another thing about like releasing... I'm going to include like all the other miscellaneous features and
yes,
other
exactly.
mixtapes. 4 hours worth of that same flow a year.
Yes, which you just don't need to do. If you do it once a year, that's fine or something like that. But
if you do it once a year, that's like pushing it because it's like...
because yeah, you should grow. You should always
and, like,
grow as an artist.
To be fair, rather than like some artists, like Future has shown an ability to go into emotions and do like really creative things.
Yes.
Like Never Forget, Slob On Me Knob Won A Grammy. Mm-hmm. But like...
La-di-da-di-da.
And even then, that was like a reference to, that wasn't his own like lyric, that was a reference to older rap music. But like, he's thoughtful in that way. It makes sense in certain aspects of it. But like, he also just, again, just pushes out too much that isn't really that great.
Well, like, one of my, which is the Sorta Sean song, wow, I can't speak. Is a decent, like that one, I'm like, okay, I kind of like that song because the beat and everything's a little bit different.
His house, one of my niggas trapping out a penthouse, one of my niggas on top hip house, one of my niggas come through, knock you off, one of my niggas drink syrup, no coffee, one of my niggas be scamming, yeah, busting checks, he's a scammer, yeah, one of my niggas coming home in the air, one of my niggas got a body in here, one of my niggas on Miley need help, one of my niggas hit a real when he rap, one of my niggas don't never play fair, one of my
the lyrics are very repetitive in it, but it's that one's fine, and I wish he would do more stuff like that where it was a little off tempo, a little bit different within the beats, and then it goes right back posted with Demons, and then it goes back to same old Future, where it's like, I've heard this 1,000 times. You can put any song on this and put it into another album, and it basically fits. And
yeah.
It's like, that's one thing where you can put it and make it. Make something that's your own sound, but if you make it so repetitive where every album kind of blends together where I don't know a difference really between the two, like between four or five of his albums, there's a problem with that.
Yeah, like as with most like male trap artists and a lot of female pop artists, their albums are way too long and they say too little.
Yeah, there are decent songs at the end of this. Tycoon and 100 Shooters. I actually like 100 Shooters, which is with Meek Mill and Doughboy. That song might be my favorite on the album where it's good.
$50 million in cash, that's a cold case. Spent so much cash in Chanel, they want a CID. Bust down on the Uchiwala, I'm so sincere. Got 100 shooters sitting outside. Got 100 shooters sitting outside. I've been getting rich and rich. Damn near pissed on bitches. I've been thinking real vindictive. Kill the ops, fuck they sisters. Fucking Catholic, semi-Christian, semi-automatic, I got vision.
The rest really isn't that good. Life is good with Drake. The Drake's part's okay.
But like that's the thing with the album is that like I like many of the features actually. This is one time where like I almost wish Future would pull a DJ Khaled and just fill his album with only features because like it's almost like Kanye West and Kid Cudi. It's like when you put like half of both of them and half of their energy mm-hmm. and they like kind of mellow each other out.
Kid Cudi's fantastic.
It's not that bad. Like but like Kid Cudi can be a little bit too much of himself and Kanye West is pretty much always too much of himself.
Yeah, exactly.
Put them together on an album and they mellow each other out enough.
Yeah, you can actually hear Kid Cudi say English words instead of going
with Future when he like he invites a little bit of Lil Uzi Vert on his like song
that's together, all right.
Even though it sounds like a B side of Celebration Station, like it was literally ripped away from it. There's Travis Scott on there, even though it like sounds like a rip off of Highest in the Room a little bit, but it's like a mixture of Future and that artist, and it complements.
Or Harlem Shake with the Young Thug. So mine is trap money, foot star, race tar, never fall, good tar, play with rats, trap star, bread far, money cars, cook hard, white chalk, non-stop, choppers make them do the Harlem Shake. Ray Charles, you can still see him shine. Red Razor,
Yeah, it sounds like a Young Thug song, which is why I'm also a little bit partial to that as well. It's like the Drake thing where like you'll be able to find some songs you like on here, mm-hmm. but what is this for? What is the point?
Yeah, and that's the thing with me with
this?
I think Future is an extremely overrated artist. Within trap because there is good trap. There are artists that make good trap. I will even admit that where you have obviously 21's my favorite. He can get monotonous too, but every song he goes to is usually makes it better. Lil Uzi Vert's album, at least he does some stuff a little different, even though again it's like it sounds childish in my way, but at least he's doing different instrumentation on it a little bit. He's adding some stuff. Travis Scott, you could say that as well, but now he's starting to get a little stagnant within it, at least in this features that I've heard him in. So it'll be interesting whenever he releases new music.
I was going to say, like, most of the female trap artists, like Cardi B, Megan Thee
Stallion. They're like, they are eons and eons. They're not even on the same earth planet.
It's like we flip it where, like, there's the men's league and the women's league, but, like, no one watches the men's league. And then, like, the women's league, they get, like, overpaid. We end up having to go, like, hey, well, why aren't the men getting paid?
Because Meg Thee Stallion's album is... way shorter.
Meg Thee Stallion's album, in retrospect, better. I want there to be more songs on it. Like, yes. I actually want, if Meg Thee Stallion released like another thing this year that was about as long as Suga, it might be phenomenal.
Yeah, and here's the thing too, because even the remix that she did on with Savage with Beyonce is fantastic. Then you go to the remix of Life is Good and you put Drake, DaBaby, and Lil Baby. And it's just, the opening is kind of funny because Future at one point goes, "Pimp my Texas!" And I started laughing. And then it goes into the same exact thing onto it, but it doesn't change much of the song. It just adds to it to where just makes it more monotonous, more plain. So
well,
that's
Sean,
the thing
I'm
with...
I'm proud of you for getting to the end of the album.
I listened to the entire album because I have friends and people I respect who are big Future fans. And in order, as I always say, in order to dislike something, you have to at least bare minimum have a general understanding, general knowledge of it, or else you're just being ignorant.
Yes.
And I have a general understanding of Future because I listen to a bunch of his different things. I try to get into him, but like it just... it's so uninspiring when there's so much other good music coming out where people are pushing the boundaries. We'll get to Charli XCX's album in a little bit where that's a pop artist that changes the flow, changes up stuff. You have Future that makes the same shit for the past like 5 years. So
very similar shit for the past 5 years. I see like a progression.
I mean, there's
Future,
difference between
much slower.
Yeah, exactly. There's difference between Super Slimy and this, but still like...
And then there's just like Future as a person,
and then we'll
which
get
is
into
just
that.
Like there's we might as well get into it about right now because
let's
like,
do it, baby.
This is audio. This is how we go. So like, let's start a little bit light. I'm gonna go out of order here, but let's start light. Mother's Day.
Oh, okay. You wanna go
for
there?
For Future was a little bit interesting. The way Future started his Mother's Day thing was that he. I love how Vulture describes him as a veteran dad.
How are you a veteran dad?
When you have six baby mamas.
Oh my god. Oh.
He fired off a happy Mother's Day tweet to six of his baby mamas, including Ciara, but not including his eldest partner, is Jessica Smith, who sued him for child support in 2016.
Pay your taxes, Future.
And then he mentioned another one. He said it's unclear whether Future is actually confirming another kid and mother here, but with a newcomer to the mix would bring his total up to 7 kids with 7 women.
I'll judge you hard.
Yeah, Diplo also pulled a Drake and announced on Mother's Day surprise he has a kid that he hasn't met yet because of the coronavirus has prevented him from being able to travel. But Diplo joked saying that the kid has a better haircut than him. But we're
please
talking about...
Please, God.
We're talking about Future here. The point is the Future has an interesting relationship and
with females.
Expression with females.
And men.
Yes, which then leads us to... what happened this week where, yes. God, yeah, let me explain this story. It's a doozy. So he sent a bunch of like cryptic tweets relating to some baby mama belonging to the streets. It was basically Future was jealous because he saw one of his exes in a rapper's music video. This is like the most... rap story ever. It's so ridiculous. Turns out that she was just on a music video shoot for Lil TJ and Rich the Kid doing a song together because Rich the Kid got swooped up into this. And he's like, yo, no, Future, I don't want none of the smoke. No, wait, no, Future.
Catch the smoke!
Yeah, so like he's doing this whole thing. It goes back to this history of he gets very territorial and like vicious when it comes to his baby mamas and his women in his personal life. There was... like restraining orders issues. There's like rumors of violence. It's not like XXXTentacion bad, but like
if it was XXXTentacion bad, I would go off.
Been like pretty kind of questionable. There's that time last year where oh god damn it, this wrong article came up. But basically, Future created a game where he and Kanye West was like a flash game or like a
single
game where they were like throwing gold chains on women in bikinis on the beach, and that was like a promotion for the album. There's
the objectification of women.
There's
continues.
The Future clip where he's in a music video and he's walking around a bunch of women and says this is his collection. I mean, like, there's a certain part where it's just like there's trapping and there's like what it's about and there's like a lifestyle where you are like a ladies' man. If I'm just being like very general about this, but there's also just like
when, being a disgusting
at,
human.
At what point is this just like for joke or for show? Like, at what point is this like whatever? Like,
this is like Alex Jones where he says, "Hey, you can't arrest me because I'm playing a character."
I mean, it's sort of like that at times. It seems like, so you just can't really tell with Future, and he has this. I mentioned that in the context of this album just because every trap artist raps about this stuff to a certain extent, but then there's their lifestyle, and this lifestyle doesn't come out for every single artist, just saying there. Maybe he can chill a little bit. Anyways, arbitrary scale this week is establishments you'd first go to after things reopen. Scraping the bottom of the barrel here. Like, where would you first run to? It doesn't have to be a specific place to go out on a location, but like...
first things you go to when
like imagine it was like a gun goes off at like 5 a.m. one day and it's like okay,
gotcha. So this is going to be
keep in mind you're avoiding a rush.
Yeah. Because this album is pretty bad. Where would I least want to go?
Smart and Final.
No.
For me, it's Smart and Final.
Okay, for you, Smart and Final, that's a good one.
Because it's Elevator Trap, so it's like a little bit for everyone. It's like for the working
people. I was going to say, insert stupid mall here. Like, just go to a, Cerritos Mall or something.
Lakewood Mall.
Oh, God, yeah. There we go.
The one with the Costco.
The one with the Costco. Just trying to park there when, like, a gun goes off, the amount of people that are going to be there.
I mean, more guns are going to go off after that.
Pretty much, yeah.
Yeah, so, you know what you should make it? You have a chance to change it. Mm. JCPenney, which just went bankrupt.
Didn't it just go bankrupt?
Just went bankrupt.
Oops.
JCPenney's selling their stores to a real estate firm they just created called JCPM Holdings. I'm kidding about the name, but they are doing this.
But, wow, that's like, kind of funny.
They're just like, okay, well, we're just going to sell real estate to ourselves for bankruptcy.
Because,
money.
You know, that's how that works.
Great country. Phenomenal country.
Phenomenal.
Yes.
So we have Charlie XCX's quarantine release, How I'm Feeling Now, which is 11 songs, 37 minutes long. She announced that she was doing this maybe about a month and a half ago or so, that she's been working on music while being isolated because she's like, what else am I going to do? And this made me... she said that along the lines of it made me realize I wanted to do some different things or whatever within her music, which I'm like, cool, let's see what happens. And to the polar opposite of Future, she definitely experimented with a lot of different sounds on this album, like a lot.
Yes.
I thoroughly enjoyed it. I didn't really know what to expect because she released Charlie at the tail end of last year. So, and we liked that album. It was a good pop album.
The tail end being like late summer, early fall.
Yeah.
I'm checking right now. Yeah. It was, September.
September, yeah. So anyways, we liked that album. It was poppy for sure, but like it wasn't anything crazy. We liked the production of it or whatever.
Yeah, within the realm of pop. There's like the really
There's Ariana Grande generic, which I'm not allowed to comment on. And then you have Billie Eilish, you have Troye Sivan, whatever. Here you go, and you got good artists, and Charlie's up there now. Especially with this album because, whoa, she did a lot of different shit on this. So it starts with Pink Diamond, which definitely sets the theme of this album where it's more dark in the way, but her voice still makes it, it's interesting, it's like playing with dark and light in a way, because the production sounds really heavy and dark and mysterious in a way, but her voice sounds more lighter on it, so it's kind of tailing through the two strains of that, which I enjoy a lot. I just wanna go real hard, pink diamond in the dark. I just wanna go real hard, I just wanna go real hard. I just wanna go real hard, I just wanna go real hard. Pink diamond in the dark. I just wanna go real hard, I just wanna go real hard. I just wanna go real hard for days. I just wanna feel it in different ways. Every single night kinda feels the same. I'm a pink diamond, I need space. I'm online and I'm finna say powers. Watch me shine for the boys in the cameras. In real life, so it starts with that kind of a, I would say more dystopian sound is a good way to explain it. Forever is good. Let's see, where was I? 7 years is another good song. You have other songs in the middle of the album, which, so you have two sides of this album. The opening is more like kind of dark. You have a couple of generic popish songs in there. And then you have Enemy, I Finally Understand, C2.0, which are like really out there. Enemy is a fantastic track.
I really, track. Really like
very, very, very good. And then you have I Finally Understand right after it, which straight up sounds like Mode Selector, which I'm like, what the fuck is this song? Because I did not expect her to play with a EDM beat that's like chopped up into three bits like Mode Selector does in like 2002, which is a really niche genre to play with as a pop artist. Finally understand, my therapist said I hate myself really bad, you tell me it's fine, let me cry and hug it out, the baby.
So the thing with this album to me, my hot take with it is it sounds like really poppy Sophie because it's industrial in a lot of ways. Like it plays with industrial motifs and instrumental and sounds, especially in a lot of the drums and percussion. Whereas Sophie's significantly more experimental and kind of avant-garde to the point where like the first time you listen to it, you're like, I'm not sure if I liked her last album.
Yeah.
But like you got it for what it was. It was very industrial and experimental.
Exactly.
This is a lot more of a mainstream pop. It's a lot easier to get into.
Which is
But it is inspired by industrial electronic music and experiments a little bit.
Yeah, because that's what, like Mode Selector, even some Bjork. Because you have Bjork in like the late 2000s that has some of this industrial sound, which I think I said the same thing with Sophie because that one reminded me of that. Sophie, it's hard to listen to in the way where, because it's so avant-garde in that way. Where
it can be a lot of sounds. There's not a lot of cohesion on purpose.
Exactly, which I can understand as an artist, which I did say. This is definitely more into the realm of, like you were saying, that easier to listen to of experimental, but this is to me a bridge of experimental and pop. So this is a way for a lot of people to get into different music. So I think this is actually good for a lot of fans out there because she has a pretty big base and whatnot. She has a big name and everything for
it. She has a Netflix show.
That's hilarious. I didn't know that.
I mean, everyone does.
I mean, yeah, Taylor Swift does, so why not? Anyways, to where you can have young fans and stuff of her now get into the realm of deep diving into different music if they like this album. So, example, you can go into be like, what are other artists that sound like this? And then they can expand their horizons.
You understand there's like an extreme pipeline between Charlie XCX to Sophie to Vince Staples.
Wow, whoa, all right, that's because
Sophie produced, like, yeah, right, and he, like, a lot of her sounds are like
whoever produced Back Back though needs like 16 awards for that song. So
that may have also no.
I know she did Yeah Right, and did she do Samo or something? And did she?
Yeah,
she,
Samo. And there's also one with Flume on there as well. I forgot.
That's why that album's like on a top god tier for me. But anyways, at the end of the album, you have a little bit more poppy after the experimental. But then you get the last song, Visions, which the last like minute of it is just straight up like scream, like 2003 scream garage weird mixes in the beat. And then you just have like, at the end. I'm like, this is hilarious because it's out there. And for a pop artist to do that, I really respect her for doing this.
Another thing with this album is that like it's a quarantine album, so the expectations are kind of kept inherently low.
Yeah, because she made this up in like a month and a half.
Yeah, a month and a half. Shit. And here's where it does show. As an album, it doesn't play as well through as Charlie. Charlie feels more complete. This feels closer to a collection of songs. But again,
it's not cohesive
my expectations are lowered because it is... A, kind of meant to be a raw expression of the moment and how she's feeling in the moment, while B, an opportunity, at least with production, to experiment a lot of different sounds. Mm-hmm. Not just her alone. She worked with a lot of other producers on making this, too.
I figured.
But even then, I think because it was you're working with a lot of producers, you're experimenting a lot, and you're doing this in a short period of time, that's the trade-off to not making it sound as cohesive. However, it's like... Again, like, it's like Gorillaz the Fall, which is like an album in the middle of things made by someone who has a lot of musical ideas in their head and doesn't want to go, like, completely mad and stir crazy.
Yeah.
And, like, it's, unlike The Fall, which is basically three songs and just, like, kind of random.
Yeah.
And made on an iPad to prove a point, this is just really, it sounds generally nice. And there's songs off of this that I would like.
This for sure. This makes me really respect her as an artist. Because when she was saying I'm gonna make a quarantine album, I'm like, okay, there's two ways this can go. This can go to Lana Del Rey, be like, oh, I'm sad.
I have an acoustic guitar.
I'm Miss Americana. I forget that Venice is not in Long Beach. Oh, I'm all sad.
She is British though. Trinxx.
And yeah, and then you go, and then she does it like, shit's fucked up and bullshit. But you know what? Let's make some good music. Boom, there you go.
Yeah, World's Terrible Music's great. That's pure audio face right there.
And that's this album is right there.
Stories you'd want to go back to after things reopen. Which is a very fitting album.
Stories I want to go back to.
Or like places, establishments.
This is...
Very fitting since this is a quarantine album.
This is the hockey rink for me.
For you, yes.
Like, this is me going... Not to play a game, because it's not like God tier. But it's to skate. Like that first opening skate back, when I'm going to eat shit like 30 times, because I haven't been on its blades in like 3 months. It's just that first feeling of getting the ice, you hear the sound, you're like, oh, I'm back home, baby. That's the song.
For me, this is an obscure jazz bar in a part of LA that is about to be gentrified, but hasn't yet, so it's still kind of tolerable.
I think I know what you're talking about, which is hilarious.
It's not a particular
not
jazz
particular,
bar,
but like
it's just like a certain vibe and feeling where like, this is cool, but not too cool. There's people here.
You know Tori Amos, Tori Amos hiding in the corner back there, still watching.
Yeah, there's a... Starline Social Club is, I think, a place in Oakland that is very similar to this vibe all the time. But,
he's probably headlines that every Tuesday night.
Anyways, audio face, we've got the meats as far as. I have no idea why I said that. No, but like, there's a lot of really substantive stories that we're doing today. This is why I said that.
Okay.
But before we.
It's one way to put it.
Before we get into that, there is a British radio show that was called, hosted by John Peel. It's pretty legendary because it had like a lot of musicians on it, and it's really old. I'm talking about like 70s and 80s musicians.
It's on BBC Radio 1. Because you have all this stuff now where you have it where a lot of artists come on to
like they
Radio
play music,
1.
They play music and they come on our like premiere their thing. Sometimes they do live stuff, but generally kind of.
Yeah, exactly. Radio 1 is pretty big and they do a lot of artists and stuff. But this is the first like big time when it came, was getting up into the ups and ups.
One of the first radio. Times. Yeah. I mean, like, so basically the whole.
Like the Sullivan Show.
Like hundreds of recordings have been organized and uploaded online.
Oh shit.
I can include a link in the description for this podcast here, but you have shows like The Cure in 1979, Nirvana in 1991, Joy Division in 1979, Bikini Kill in 1993, My Bloody Valentine, The Cure, The Smiths, Pulp, like T-Rex, there's
New
so
Order,
much in here.
Jack White.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there is a lot in here of a certain era of like late, mid to late 70s all the way to early 90s, just like the greats. A lot in
rock.
Damn, I have
to listen to that Joy Division because... It's sad because, I mean, a lot of these artists are not around anymore.
So like the bands are broken up for different reasons.
Yeah, either artists have died or they've broken up, whatever. So some of these, like Joy Division, they're live. It's so hard to find and whatnot because they only did so few live before Ian Curtis off himself. And I want to hear that and see if it's like in a good condition and whatnot for it.
Yeah.
Just to hear it, to see what it sounds like.
So. I mean, as much as I love things like NPR Tiny Desk, or a lot of the BBC One's radio sessions. Mm-hmm. It'd be really cool to hear these.
Exactly, for some of my favorite artists.
Yes. Now this
we
is
got the meats.
This is the closest we can reasonably on Audio Face get to the political report.
Pretty much.
This is pretty much the direct line.
Yeah, this is the direct line, and it's called unions.
Yeah, this is about musicians' unions. That way they can't organize. Now you're getting it. Now you're catching on.
And that's
on.
Why Neon Indian is the front line.
So where do we begin with the story? Basically, the main thing you should know is that there is an organization called the UMAW, Union of Musicians and Allied Workers.
Allied Workers.
So I was thinking, it's not like artists or something, but it's like Allied Workers. So it's musicians, but it's also like the stage crew.
The producers, all the other stuff.
Yeah. So it's meant to be like... encompassing to everyone who's on the creative side of the music business.
Yes.
I don't think this would cover like the A&Rs, for example.
No.
But it's on the really...
Like guitar techs or like whatever.
A&R is like the line between creative and business, but I think it's still like more business side of things. But yeah, this is the creative and production part of it. So they're aiming to organize music workers and fight for a more just music industry. At least that's what they say on their website. And as there have been a... increase in union activity in a lot of different realms, from journalism and media to grocery workers and a lot of other things, especially during the COVID-19
pilots
crisis.
Union.
Pilots, many other things being like unionized, and that's really coming to a head in 2020. I think it's going to be a thing we look back on in history. But musicians are trying to get together, and especially during COVID-19, trying to make sure that musicians are covered because there's no live events, there's no anything like the bar I was just doing before. So these people who like rely on work and it's not like a set salary, they don't have much of a safety net. And until we adjust the way the country works so we get like every other civilized country on earth and have a safety net for people who are temporarily out of work based on economic conditions they can't control, these unions will be a good thing to help fight for those sort of protections. The confusing thing about this is that there is a union that already exists called the AFM, the American Federation of Musicians. They've been around since 1896.
Yes, basically when... they could unionize whatever for styles of music, they started it early on. It's like the Auto Club.
Yeah.
For musicians, but...
Yeah. Like many unions do, they provide resources for their members as well as protecting them and then working, not like being necessarily adversarial against employers, but working with employers to make sure that they're treated fairly.
The big thing was when radio started dawning in like the 30s and 40s, especially in the 40s, AFM had a big help in making sure that they were getting rights to their music and stuff that was being aired on through radio waves, and then also that there were sessions and everything, that everything was good within between radios and the artists. So there's a lot of protection stuff in the 40s. That was big time because you had so many artists and stuff exploding up around that time in the 40s and 50s.
And that's like, part of the reason why like a lot of the efforts done by unions like AFM can contribute to why during FDR's New Deal there were specific government programs meant to fund the arts and musicians to make sure like they still had a break. But they're like obviously... in this alphabet soup of organizations that was created during the New Deal, you had to have people lobbying in the interest for these groups, including musicians, and this was a big deal for that. Exactly. Of course, later, like, AFM is definitely not perfect. They were kind of working against people of color.
Yes, in the 70s.
In the 70s, yeah. Because jazz musicians, obviously jazz was seen as criminals music. Wait till y'all see trap.
throws gold necklaces on girls in bikinis twerking on them.
It's like 30 years later. It's like,
eat a dick, old man.
They thought jazz was for hooligans.
Yes.
But
meanwhile.
Yeah, but during this ridiculous time, it was just an expression of music that was really beautiful and interesting. And the only difference it seemed to have between white music was that it was black people who were doing it mostly.
And jazz is fantastic.
And jazz, like, bridged a lot of the, not a lot of it, but, like, some of the racial divide was between black musicians and white musicians, because they worked together and made really kick-ass music.
You'd have, like, you'd have a white guy on piano, you'd have a black guy on saxophone, this and that, just, like, the integration, and it was awesome.
It would be cool, but, so...
But AFM's like, nah, we can't have that.
Yeah, and so AFM is... the reason why UMAW is kind of getting a lot of attention right now from artists such as, I had a list around here somewhere, but...
I have right here. Yeah, I have like...
Dive, Downtown Boys, Fugazi, Torres, Diet Sig, Alice Bag, Sonic Youth.
Of Montreal, Sonic Youth, yeah, Eve Six, a lot of artists that we've listened to and respect a lot. I first heard of UMAW through Dive because they are some of the most progressive artists I've ever heard of. Dive are crazy. But I saw them talk about stuff in December and January about like, hey, there's a new union and whatnot out for artists to get out and we should start getting out and get more people to support it because they were a big thing for Medicare for All, a bunch of stuff on like Sanders' platform and whatnot just to get artists and whatnot the care and stuff that they need because... It's really hard for them to get health insurance and stuff, depending because there's no direct employer for a lot of them, potentially. Yeah. So, especially for newer artists and stuff that are coming up. But the biggest thing that UMAW is they circulated a letter and they said that they demand the CARES Act unemployment benefits goes through the remainder of the year. So rent cancellation, regardless of immigration status, because you have a lot of artists and stuff who immigrated up and they're Neon Indian was one of them when he was younger. Medicare for All, you have like some type of UBI and whatnot, universal basic income.
A progressive platform. Democratic Party, yeah. Like platform, and one that would provide the aforementioned social safety net that would help people so that like while they're in between work as the economy is kind of like evening out, they're not like completely on their asses.
Exactly, especially right now when artists who have a big following, artists who are like more indie, so I mean they don't have a big following as Future, but they have a decent, relatively big following, they're losing 70-80% of their revenue right now because people aren't buying music. People, even we saw the streaming numbers are low. There's no live shows are gone, and that's where a lot of them generate income. So like
that's where most of the income is generated.
Exactly.
So it's really troubling for everyone. So basically, like the long and short of this longer kind of thing that we really wanted to talk about was that AFM exists and they've done good things in the past, but they've also very much shown that. Much like you have a battle within the Republican Party, within the Democratic Party, of the establishments versus the more ideological wing of those respective parties, since they're talking about like Medicare for All and UBI, I'm just going to use like
because I know AF.
But basically, what I'm saying is like AFM is not pushing things as not going as far as what a newer group of people want. From unions.
Because
they're not like they're not using their lobbying efforts to fight for the things and more actively push for the things that the musicians need.
No, because AFM has a COVID-19 fund, but it's the problem with it is it's hard to figure out where all of the money is necessarily going. They have like three sources of funding where it's like the Actors Fund, you have Union Plus, which is a mortgage assistance program, and then you have the Petrillo Fund, which sounds like the petrodollar, and that's for disabled musicians. So there's little things that they do, but the problem is that musicians are saying that's not enough for a time like this where they are almost completely out of work, especially for the smaller artists. So I love seeing this.
Absolutely love to see it. Yeah.
From people who are just honest grassroots people that are popping up and saying, hey, we need a general, like, we need to all come together in this
the rules are bullshit, but we're playing by the bullshit rules.
Exactly.
And now we're getting screwed
because fucked.
Like, out of completely out of our control. So,
because
use your power to fight for us so that we, like, can survive out here, basically.
And that's because Nancy Pelosi wants a new set of pearls. Anyways, we're gonna go.
No, she's, can you, don't be so sexist. She wants ice cream. Okay.
Lord.
And if you want even an ounce more of that, check out the political reports that we do. We'll probably have one in the next like couple of weeks. We are joined by Caesar and Bam from We Made It Podcast.
Yes, and they are
politics and
always hot takes. Love that
it's
shit.
Really fun.
So we're gonna go into our third album.
Third album. This will probably be a little bit shorter, but
because
it's like a pickup.
Yeah. We have this Gray from Moses Sumney, which we reviewed the first part, which is songs 1 through 12. And this is the second part, so the entire album, double album, was released, which is an extra 8 songs on it. It's definitely a continuation of the sound that you had for the first part, but with a little bit more... I wouldn't say normal pieces of music, but ones that are a little more mainstream into it.
Less experimental.
Less experimental.
I wouldn't even say more mainstream, but
because
less
experimental. Because none of this is mainstream at all.
Yeah. The thing with Moses Sumney is that it's sort of... I think I described it almost like D'Angelo in the sense that it's very soul and like...
It's like Peter Bjorn in that way,
yeah,
too. Where it's like a mixture of him and Peter Bjorn would be like a perfect... description of it, because you can get some of those really airy themes where it's a lot of just voice and percussion in the background, and that's really it. And then you have other pieces which are more experimental. You have some stuff that's a little bit more substance in it. So there's a lot to listen to in this.
Yeah,
I didn't know if it necessarily needs
the
two on it, because I genuinely liked the first part, and I think I liked a lot of In Bloom. I liked Color with U-O-U-R.
That's a super nice spelling of it.
Which is a really weird
spelling. We really both loved Neither Nor.
I would say my favorite is Neither Nor, and it probably still is on this double album, is Neither Nor is probably my favorite. I also like Before Your Go, which is the last song on it, and
yeah.
Then Me in 20 Years, I like a lot as well.
Hey, me in 20 years, does your milk still turn to rot too soon? Do you still hoard
really, on this one, I like, on the new one, I like Polly and Bystanders.
Okay, those are good, too.
I think they're really good, but like more to say, I guess, like to get the idea of this out on there, is that there's a lot of different ways to do double albums. Double
yes.
albums are nothing that exists. You could do the Culture 3 way, which is we're just gonna release it. Mm-hmm. Like, here's all 30 of the songs, have fun. There's the Fool's way, which is you release it kind of fairly half. Both parts are manageable. It's kind of hard to tell why it needed to be double. It could just been one, and you're a little more economic with what songs you pick, and
exactly.
maybe just make use of EPs and all
yeah,
this other
exactly.
stuff, which is traditional, but you're allowed to try different things. We got to EPs for a purpose. There's the Eternal a Takeaway, which is, I call it deluxe mode.
Yeah.
Which is 1 week later, you drop a deluxe album.
Yep.
That's just like all the releases. And then there's the 1975 way, which is just like, step three question mark.
Yeah, which is basically single, 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 single. We also have another 7 songs coming on, so I don't even know why.
Like, we have a double album as like a concept, but it's really in marketing because the albums seem kind of apart from each other now. Like, it's going to be interesting. We'll have plenty of stuff to talk about that soon. But like this version of the double album, which is like you release part one and the second part completes it. Zoo did this as well with Ringo's Desert, but it was short.
And it was really short, and the second part really wrapped up the whole album. The problem with Gray is I really, really like it in the sense of that first album, that first part. I don't think it needs a second thing because I wouldn't say super experimental, but it's so unique and so different. It doesn't need any more of the same in that aspect because a lot of the songs on that second part definitely belong in it, but I don't think they need to be released as that. They could be released in different EPs or singles or stuff. Like even with, or you could do Tame Impala, where Tame Impala left 2 singles out of his album.
Yeah.
So there's things like that where you could still release the music, but you don't necessarily need to put it into this album because now this album feels really long when you go from top to bottom.
Yeah.
And for the songs and everything that are in it that are so like ethereal and the kind of that...
Airy
style of music, you can only have it for so long before it just kind of morphs into just something that it just feels too long.
I'm just going to say, I would definitely prefer to listen to an hour of Moses Sumney than an hour of Future.
1,000,000%, yes.
And like, it's not even just like it's hard to compare as apples and oranges because of different genres, but just so objectively, different. Moses Sumney sounds better.
And Moses Sumney is good. Like, that first part is fantastic. I really like it.
I think this ends very well. Like, yeah, I think
Before You Go is a sexy song.
From Lucky Me down to Before You Go is all really nice, and it wraps in with the beginning, with the first song. I just wish, like, some of the, not filler, but some of the erroneous songs from the first part would be cut out and put some of the good ones from part two and then
exactly
make it all maybe 48 minutes. That would have been a perfectly fine thing. It's a little bit on the long side still, maybe 52 minutes on the long side, but you're getting to the gist of what makes it
exactly
on the album. Unfortunately, some songs got on the cutting room floor. Plastic Beach, there were 90 songs made for Plastic Beach. Damon Albarn just decided to release those over a decade's period of time.
Yeah.
But
I mean, Kid A had so many songs that they released another album the following year. So like you have different ways of doing this. And I think this is the wrong way of doing it, to where now, I wouldn't say you ruin a perfectly good album, but I think there are different ways to make this album better if you cut out some of the songs of those two parts and just chopped up all the stuff. Well, not to say chop up, but you put into the stuff that gets to the point of it, so that way it doesn't feel as long, doesn't feel as...
drawn out.
Yeah, it's like drawn out.
That's for sure.
But it's good.
Yeah, it's good. It just doesn't play through as well as an album.
What does it mean to play us out?
Establishments you go to after things reopen. I'm going to give this a... barbershop. Longer than you want it to be.
This is the dentist, because it feels really nice when your teeth get clean, but you hate going there.
That's fair.
Where?
That's really robust. It's like the arbitrary scales are better ways of comparing designed albums than scores. Anyways, I'm going to go through this really quickly because these are things I hate and I might be able to end before we have to do some recording magic. Anyways, so 6ix9ine, we talked last night on like the No Chill Island Barely edition, where we said that he had to be removed from his new place because his address got leaked. He released music that people hated. Everyone still calls him a snitch, and he's just doing everything he can to get more attention. One of those recent attention outbursts was a $200,000 donation to No Kid Hungry. 6ix9ine said he was going to make this donation and like good faith and everything, but the Gooba rapper was saddened to find out that No Kid Hungry denied the donation, saying that, quote, as a child-focused campaign, our policy is to decline funding from donors whose activities do not align with our mission and values.
That's fucking hilarious.
It's pretty funny to me. I don't, I mean, like, whatever. it sucks that he's throwing this like pity party for himself. I think that's funny, but whatever. So I haven't mentioned this at all because I would love to go the rest of my life without talking about this ever again.
What the fuck is this?
But there's some actual rapper named Lil Dicky, and he's another one of those like mediocre white dudes with a Jufro who thinks that because he just exists as a person and appropriates black culture that he should have a TV show and a bunch of record deals. Anyway,
so is this like when you're a failed comedian, so you just became a right-wing commentator because you can't do your job right?
Exactly. This is exactly the Steven Crowder.
This is exactly the Steven Crowder.
Except this is more like entertainment focused.
This is exactly the Dave Rubin.
Yeah, if Dave Rubin didn't spike his hair, he'd be Jufroing it up. It somehow surpassed Atlanta as the most watched show on FX. I think they just advertised the shit out of it because I just like hated the advertisements. I don't know why the show exists. It's, I guess people like it, and I guess it's getting another season, but it's, somehow he got another season. I don't get it. Whatever. And the last thing, EDC is usually in May or June,
yes,
but can't happen because of the COVID and all the things happening in 2020 right now. However, they basically just got all the people they booked and live streamed it for free for everyone and made it like a donation-a-thon.
Yes.
And you got a lot of people watching it, all the DJ sets, a lot of them were either like from their own house and they made up their own sets. Like Major Lazer basically has a setup where there's like a bunch of green screens and they have dancers in one room and the DJs in another room and there's like working it together.
That was pretty cool.
And so yeah, other DJs just like pre-recorded their sets and had those things going on. And it was pretty nice actually. It was working pretty well. What was it? Oliver Heldens made his home set into an aquarium and photoshopped pictures of DJs onto fish. And so you had like Steve Aoki on a mermaid. And there's just a bunch of just other random shit that was just like a fun time to have on there. But ultimately, like the only thing that sucked about it, the sets were great actually. The only thing that sucked about it was like it takes the fun out of going to a festival, which is like going outside with people.
And that's some of the hard things with electronic music is that a lot of electronic music is best seen live because of the sound quality.
And experience live. It elicits energy and you can dance it out and you can dance out socially with people. It's a fun thing. It's why it's established. So, it was fine. It was a good set and they're good sets, but like it's no different than playing them on SoundCloud in a row and listening to them that way. So like we're seeing how these festivals go. Sometimes they're really good and sometimes, or like not really, these festivals post, this COVID stuff happening and these live things that people are doing on Instagram, and sometimes they're like kind of cool and novel, but I think we've had enough of the DJ battles, we've had enough of the
we're good,
all that stuff, we're just kind of ready to for things to safely go back to normal.
Yes.
That has been Audio Face. Thank you very much for listening. To play us out.
So follow us on all the social medias at Audio Face Pod. You can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at SWSaurus. You can follow Dan at Dan from the Web on Twitter and Dan from the Internet on Instagram. Rate us 5 stars on Apple Podcasts because that's what most people use, but you should switch to Spotify because get rid of the communist fruit. We have the 1975 bonus episode that'll be coming out
later this week.
We have that review coming out next week, and listen to the Run the Jewels episode with Tammy because that's also going to get reviewed in June. A couple weeks from now. Thank you for listening.
Cheers.
Bye.